The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I was double vaccinated. I had received the Pfizer vaccine in March. I had not been boosted. I was scheduled to get boosted, but I had an endoscopy scheduled the next day, and that got pushed back. And then all of a sudden, I captured COVID. And as a result of that, everything went downhill from there, and it was a real road life ride. But I've been incredibly blessed to survive it, and I'm here talking to you now. And the doctor in the emergency room came up to me, and they brought me back into the back room, and they said, in all likelihood, had you not been vaccinated, based on what we're seeing with your liver and your lungs, you may have been gone.
I think Candace Owens put it best, saying that initially it was, you got to get the vax so that you won't catch it and you won't spread it. And then it was, get the vax, you still may catch it, but, you won't spread it. Or you won't get hospitalized. You won't get seriously ill. Here's an example. This ESPN commentator, he gets seriously ill, goes into the hospital. He's been double jabbed. Nearly dies, judging by his account. And still, the vaccine is perfect. The vaccine saved his life, he says. What happens next? Is Candace Owens right? Next, it's going to be get the jab, get the booster. You still may go to the hospital. You still may die, but it won't be quite as painful. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. We're grateful for our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio. Channel 3 on that platform takes you to the live audio stream of this show every weekday morning. If it's Oklahoma time or Central Standard Time, it's 11 a.m., 9 a.m. on the West Coast, noontime on the East Coast. Channel 3 on CRN Digital Talk Radio also has a couple of replays through the day, and we've recently been added to Channel 6 on their platform as well, two or three replays per day with Channel 6. To get to our live video stream so that you can see all of these beautiful, well, the beautiful studio we have, the clips that we play each day, the cold opens, the montages, lots of good feedback from yesterday's show regarding the 8-minute mini documentary, which we played toward the end of the show. To get to that, again, go to the trumpet.com website. Just go to the trumpet.com/live. That'll take you to the live stream page. And also, you can get to yesterday's show. You can get to the previous 2-3 weeks of podcasts that have been posted after the fact. So, I didn't get to the updated stats from the VAERS website. They're updated every Friday. It's like a week delay, these latest statistics. They take us through January 7th, 2022. And for the week of January 7th, there were almost 17,000 more adverse reaction reports right here in the United States. And according to the CDC, you can't blot this out. You can't censor this message. I mean, it's the CDC reporting this, not me. It's not my opinion. 17,000 adverse reaction reports in a week, in 7 days. People vaxxed, just like the one you heard there at the top of the show. Of course, he's not going to blame his condition on the vaccine. But still, quite a few others are. Quite a few others are coming down with heart conditions. Quite a few others are collapsing in the midst of activities. 17,000 adverse reaction, 363 deaths for the week of January 7th. That's all. 363 Americans dying because of the vaccine. And added to that, 1,450 more urgent care cases. That's just in a 7-day span. So you're beginning, we've reported on this over the last several programs. you're getting a pretty good idea now. And this is just of what's reported. And all the indications have been that these kinds of reactions are underreported. Just a small percentage actually take the time to go to the CDC website and to report these adverse reactions. And yet, even of those reported, it's running at about 350 to 400 deaths per week because of the vaccine. How about this story from the Epoch Times a few days ago? It says, health departments in several states confirmed to the Epoch Times that they are looking into a steep surge in the mortality rate for people aged 18 to 49 in 2021. 18 to 49. This is really what makes me the most angry at all of this scaremongering, at all of this propaganda. Big Pharma, sell the vaccine no matter, and more is coming out, by the way, on Anthony Fauci's financials. We're going to learn more. The truth is going to come out, and you're going to see how connected he is to Big Pharma. Forget about the $10 million in investments that he has going on and the mutual funds and whatever else. There's going to be more specifics that expose these frauds for what they are, even as people are dying. And not just grandma, 80 years old, she's in the nursing home, she gets the COVID, and then she dies, and even there, she's probably got a comorbidity or two or three or four. 18 to 49. These are people in the prime of their life. These are people at their healthiest time in life. And we're seeing this upsurge in deaths. What's causing it? Well, that's what people want to know. Gateway pundit responding to this Epoch Times piece says, deaths in this age group, which are traditionally the healthiest working-aged Americans, skyrocketed by more than 40% from October 2020 to 2021 compared to 2018 to 19, which was, of course, before the scamdemic. So how do you explain this? How do you explain a 40% increase in deaths among 18 to 49-year-olds? It says here, this is according to the CDC, just 42% of the excess deaths included COVID-19 on the death certificate. So that would mean 58%. It's not even COVID-related. Why? Some of them, I suppose, drug overdoses. But how many are related to the vaccine? How many are related to this vaccine that nearly, I mean, he says it saved his life. It certainly didn't protect him, this ESPN anchor. It certainly didn't protect him from nearly dying because of the COVID. There was a ball girl at the Australian Open. Of course, that's been in the headlines because of Djokovic. They kicked him out of the country, wouldn't get the jab, so he's gone. The Australian Open goes forward. There was a ball girl that collapsed on Tuesday. She's at the back end of the court, keels over. A little girl, teenager. Zero Hedge had this to say. Fully vaccinated Canadian soccer star Alphonso Davies sidelined with myocarditis. And we know that the cases of myocarditis are on the rise and that they are, in fact, studies have shown that they are connected, so many of them, to the vaccine. This experimental drug says here, continuing a disturbing trend of professional soccer players being pulled from games, Canadian star Alphonso Davies, who plays for Bayern Munich, so big-time team over in Europe, is showing signs of an inflammation of the heart muscle, according to CP24. He's only 21 years old. Says Davies has been ruled out of Canada's three World Cup qualifiers set to take place in January and February. So he's gone. And you may have heard of this other website that keeps track of all of these athletes coming down with heart conditions, heart attacks, myocarditis, pericarditis. 484 athlete incidents. I forget the name of the website in particular, but according to their reporting, 282 athletes have died all around the world. Is this normal? Did it just go unreported before? Or is this very much abnormal? From the Daily Mail, it says, friends of ultra-healthy, world-class powerlifter, 23 years old, who was fully vaccinated with no underlying health conditions, beg Australians to take COVID seriously after his death. 23-year-old bodybuilder. No comorbidities. No underlying conditions health-wise. 23 years old, peak condition physically, fully vaxxed. Suddenly dies. Gateway pundit, double vaccinated 18-year-old Brazilian model dies after developing blood clots due to COVID complications. They're going to, as I've said, they're going to try to blame it all on COVID. Certainly not the vaccine. There's always going to be a doctor somewhere that'll say, hey, just because of the vaccine, you didn't die. Just be thankful for the vaccine. Another one here. It says here, the WHO joins the EU and changes direction. Suddenly warns against taking continued COVID booster shots. So there are some reports coming out now. There's this report out of the UK. We don't know if it's going to come to fruition or not. But someone caught on tape or a phone, a recorded conversation, a doctor in a hospital saying, look, stay away from the booster, stay away from the shots. They're about to be pulled from the shelf anyway. If that's true or if that's not true, I guess we'll find out soon enough. But here's the WHO. I mean, this is the WHO basically saying, you know, the boosters aren't really that effective. You want to exercise caution. There's been similar reports coming out of Europe. There's Israel, the study that says, yeah, even four shots, that's not going to protect you from the Omicron. Israeli trial, world's first, finds fourth dose not good enough against Omicron. This is from the Times of Israel. It says nearly a month after Sheba Medical Center launched a landmark study to test the efficacy of a fourth COVID shot, the hospital said Monday that this fourth booster was only partially effective in protecting against the Omicron strain. It says here, we see an increase in antibodies higher than after the third dose, said this doctor. However, we see many infected with Omicron who received the fourth dose. They've got the fourth dose and they're getting Omicron. Just like that ESPN anchor. He got two and he nearly died of COVID. Meanwhile, you've got the premier down in Victoria, Dan Andrews, the communist, saying that, you know, to be fully vaxxed now, you've got to get the third booster. Two is not going to cut it. Two means you're not vaccinated. You've got to get the third one. And they've got all those vaccine mandates for government employees and such. It's just crazy. Meanwhile, they're about to run Boris Johnson out of office in the UK. And he's basically scrapping all the COVID mandates. As I say, once they're about to be run out of town, once they're about to lose their job, then all of a sudden, hey, you know what? We need to help our economy. We need to lift these mandates. You just don't know what you're going to get from one state to the next, from one province to the next, from one country to the next. Gateway pundit here, it says New South Wales government website released its daily COVID update. Based on its daily report, most of the people who died with COVID-19 in January 2022 were at least double vaccinated. Just like that ESPN commentator, he very nearly died. Now, these are stats from the New South Wales government website. This is like, I guess, the CDC equivalent. This is according to New South Wales for January 19th. That would be today, would it not? That's today. Australia's a little bit ahead of us. So here are the stats. 32 deaths, 24 of them vaccinated, 8 of them unvaccinated. That's what? 75%? Says here from the government website. Sadly, New South Wales Health is today reporting the deaths of 32 people with COVID-19, 12 women, 20 men, Three people were aged in their 40s. Well, it gives all the ages. It says, of the 32 people who died, 23 people had received at least two doses of COVID-19 vaccine. One person had received one dose, and eight were unvaccinated. It goes through and it gives you the stats from the last several days. January 18th, vaccinated 33, unvaccinated 3. These are deaths, the daily deaths in New South Wales. Vaccinated 33, unvaccinated 3. January 17th, vaccinated 15, unvaccinated 2. January 16th, that's Sunday, vaccinated 14, unvaccinated 6. And then January 15th, it says vaccinated 16, unvaccinated 4. So it's running at about 75-80% of those dying of COVID have been vaccinated. This is leaving aside the side effects, myocarditis and the like. These are people actually dying of COVID. They're dying of COVID. The misinformation, CNN, you might have seen, they're starting a division to more carefully monitor misinformation in the news media. They need to be monitoring themselves, most of all. Listen, I had this the other day from Bill Maher. He said this. He was talking about just the misinformation. All of these Democrats who by far have fallen for the scaremongering. Listen to what he says about the COVID, clip 4.
But what about liberals? You know, the high information by the science people. In a recent Gallup survey, Democrats did much worse than Republicans in getting the right answer to the fundamental question, what are the chances that someone who gets COVID will need to be hospitalized? The answer is between 1 and 5%. 41% of Democrats thought it was over 50%. Another 28% put the chances at 20 to 49. So almost 70% of Democrats are wildly off on this key question and also have a greatly exaggerated view of the danger of COVID-2 and the mortality rate among children. All of which explains why today the states with the highest share of schools that are still closed are all blue states.
70% of Democrats are wildly off. And that, you know, you have to credit the corporate media who are out there sounding the alarm every day. 2 years on, 2 years into this, it used to be 2 weeks to stop the spread. And they know it's deeply unpopular. Boris Johnson knows it's unpopular. He's trying to save his political life. This filibuster, just to switch gears here for a moment. I saw this clip yesterday from the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. If you're in the United States and you're watching any kind of cable news, you're hearing over and over, it's like a broken record, all of these Democrats saying that the filibuster rule is racist. It's a relic of America's racist past. It's preventing the majority from going forward, having to get the 60 votes to carry on with, in the case of the Democrats, they want to rewrite election laws so that they can cheat. They want voting to be federalized so that state legislatures have no say. So you hear all the Democrats saying we need to do away with the filibuster so that our 50 votes plus Kamala Harris can force our agenda on through. Listen to what Mitch McConnell said about the Democrats and what they did just last Thursday, not even a week ago. This is clip 2.
Late last week, our Democrat colleagues briefly paused their quest to destroy the Senate's 60-vote threshold, just long enough to use the 60-vote threshold themselves to block a bill. Every Republican supported sanctioning the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that will give Russia even more leverage to bully Europe. Most of our Democratic colleagues bowed to the furious lobbying from the Biden administration to protect Putin's pipeline. There were 55 votes to pass the bill that our friends like Ukrainian President Zelensky desperately wanted passed. But Democrats blocked it by denying 60.
As McConnell says there, they had 55 votes, which means there's only 50 Republicans. So they it was actually bipartisan. 50 Republicans plus, I guess, 5 Democrats. And the rest of the Democrats blocked it. They protected Putin's pipeline. They blocked the sanctions with companies involved in the Nord Stream 2 pipeline project in order to appease Vladimir Putin. I mean, there's so many things wrong with this story. For one, how can you one day say filibuster is racist and then the very next day, 45 of you use it to prevent this from going forward so that Joe Biden can appease Vladimir Putin of all people? He's the one that's supposed to have had Donald Trump in his back pocket. And so here's Joe Biden, the fake, illegitimate president, doing everything that he can to try to calm things down with respect to Russia and Ukraine, giving Putin everything that he wants. And the Democrats using the filibuster, not in 2020, not 5-10 years ago. I mean, they did then too, but the point of it is they used it Thursday. They used it on Thursday. Breitbart says Democrats used the Senate filibuster, which they are busy trying to eliminate, to block a bill by Senator Ted Cruz on Thursday that would have sanctioned companies associated with Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline. They used... you can't make this up. They used the filibuster that they are trying to eliminate on Thursday. And listen to what they've been saying in recent weeks, hoping that they can rewrite voting laws. This is clip 7.
I believe we should abolish the filibuster.
Would you end the filibuster? Would you end the filibuster?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Then we need to get rid of the filibuster.
Filibuster was created to stop civil rights and stop the progress of people of color in this country.
Right now, it's on the Democrats to try to change the rules to save American democracy.
Eliminate the filibuster.
It's just the filibuster in a way.
This minoritarian Jim Crow relic known as the filibuster.
Reforming a filibuster rule that is dripping in racist history.
Stop acting like the filibuster is anything other than an anti-democratic tool.
The filibuster is hurting people.
Turn me around. We got to turn this around. It's dripping in racist history. And they used it last Thursday. How about that? Here's a bit more from Senator McConnell's speech yesterday, clip 3.
Now, many of these same colleagues have spent weeks thundering, literally thundering, that the Senate's 60-vote threshold is an offensive tool of obstruction, a Jim Crow relic, declaring that simple majorities should always get their way. But late last week, they literally wielded the 60-vote threshold themselves. A useful reminder of just how fake the hysteria has been.
Fake hysteria in this era of fake news, fake outrage, fake elections, fake presidents. So much fakery and phoniness. It's all around us. We got an email from one of our viewers who's lamenting that fact that there's just no truth. Of course, that's straight out of the Bible. There's no truth in the land. Truth is cast to the ground. It says here, this is Breitbart, the Biden administration allowed the Nord Stream 2 pipeline to proceed last year after shutting down the Keystone pipeline. So they shut down a pipeline that would have given Americans tens of thousands of jobs, helped the economy, no doubt kept fuel prices lower, and then they've protected Putin's pipeline. Who's the stooge of Vladimir Putin in this story? Who's the one that's being heavily influenced by Vladimir Putin? Who's the one trying to appease Vladimir Putin? And then to use the filibuster to do that, I mean, this is especially rich. President Donald Trump had sought to block Nord Stream 2 because it would have made Europe more dependent on Russia's natural gas, increasing Putin's leverage in the West and his ability to circumvent pipelines in Ukraine. It says critics were livid at Democrats and at the establishment media, which pushed the false Russia collusion conspiracy theory against Trump while ignoring Democrats' efforts to appease Russia. The efforts to appease Russia by using the filibuster of all things. Then you look at what's happening there in Russia, or at least right up next to Ukraine. Russia's been amassing troops there now for months, 100,000 troops or so. And some are wondering why they haven't already advanced on Ukraine. Richard was saying in his news stack this morning that it may be because the winter's been fairly mild and the ground isn't really frozen over, so they're worried that pushing through, it might grind into some moisture or mud. So maybe they're waiting for a break in the weather, or maybe colder weather, so that they can be more on more solid ground. In any event, they are poised and ready. The Telegraph says this: the Foreign Office has been told to prepare for crisis mode as weapons were flown from Britain to Ukraine to defend it from a Russian invasion. Russian officials and U.S. officials got together last week. There's more meetings coming up, of course, between Blinken and his counterpart. In any event, they got together last week, and Russia basically wants to see NATO disbanded, and the U.S. has resisted that. And so Russia just continues to move forward very aggressively. It says here, it comes as the White House reviews evidence from U.S. intelligence suggesting Russia is planning to attempt to take Ukraine's capital, Kiev, and overthrow the government. So they want more than just a sliver. So says some in intelligence. Joe Biden is now thought to be weighing up new options for dealing with the crisis, including providing more arms to Ukraine. Listen to the propaganda chief, Jen Psaki, yesterday at the White House, clip 5.
But where things stand right now, President Putin has created this crisis by amassing 100,000 Russian troops along Ukraine's borders. This includes moving Russian forces into Belarus recently for joint exercises and conducting additional exercises on Ukraine's eastern border. So let's be clear. Our view is this is an extremely dangerous situation. We're now at a stage where Russia could at any point launch an attack in Ukraine.
Yeah, they're poised and ready. They're ready to launch. And there's the feckless fake administration doing nothing, not even slapping sanctions on these companies connected to Nord Stream. You can't penalize Russia. You got to give him everything he wants. Look, use the filibuster if you have to. We can suspend our outrage, our phony outrage, for a day, and then tomorrow we can come back and say it's a racist relic of the past. Listen again to Jen Psaki from yesterday, clip 6.
There is a diplomatic path forward. It is the choice of President Putin and the Russians to make whether they are going to suffer severe economic consequences or not.
She's talking about suffering economic consequences. That was the point of Ted Cruz's bill. But the Dems have to use the filibuster to shoot that down because, well, it's Ted Cruz. I mean, we can't do anything in association with him. He's a Republican. He's a conservative. Meanwhile, you have Germany. And they here again, when Germany is working together with Russia, what does history teach us regarding that? They've been consistent in their effort to thwart NATO's efforts to help Ukraine. There was a story earlier in the week where the British they've wanted to supply Ukraine with some military armaments, and they're having to fly around German airspace. And, of course, Germany has the connection with Russia now because of the pipeline. So Russia can just bypass Ukraine, bully Ukraine, can do basically whatever it wants. We have an article coming out in the next magazine, the next issue of the Trumpet magazine. If you don't have a subscription, by the way, call our operators and request your free 1-year subscription, 1-866-930-3024. And that will get you tomorrow's news today. It'll come into your mailbox every month. This is from the upcoming issue. And it refers back to something my father wrote back in 2008. Here again, tomorrow's news today. He wrote in 2008, this was the first military strike of a rising Asian superpower, and there will be more. And then Jeremiah Jacques in the next Trumpet writes, this warning was issued by Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury in 2008, just after Vladimir Putin invaded the former Soviet nation of Georgia and pulled a fifth of its territory back under Russian control. And the point of Jeremiah's article here is that everything that we were saying back in 2008, it's happening. It's happening. We're talking about fulfilled prophecy. The invasion would prove to be the beginning of something much bigger. Gerald Fleury wrote, part of a dangerous new era for the world. That was back in 2008. Jeremiah says, in the 14 years since, the forecast has proven right in one former Soviet republic after another. In 2014, Putin seized Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula and plunged the nation's east into a state of protracted conflict that continues to this day as pro-Russia forces and actual Russian forces battle Ukrainian government troops. It says in 2020, Putin ensured that Belarus's longtime dictator stayed in power despite a major uprising, effectively turning Belarus into a Russian satellite state. It says that same year, he stationed thousands of Russian soldiers in Azerbaijan for the first time, where they will remain apparently indefinitely. And then it goes right into 2022 with everything that's happening in Kazakhstan and, of course, now Ukraine. This is from the Prince of Russia booklet that we produced in 2017. My father says here, what we are seeing in Russia ultimately leads to the transition from man ruling man to God ruling man. Those of you that are familiar with Bible prophecy, you know all about the 200 million man army. You know all about the Russia-China axis. You know all about the emerging seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire to come out of the heart of Europe. We've covered this at length over the years, those two booklets on your screen there, Russia and China in Prophecy, and then the Prince of Russia booklet. Again, call our operators and request your free copies, 1-866-930-3024. My father says in the booklet, we have to realize that this is all good news because Jesus Christ is going to return to this earth at the very end of the coming world war. Jesus Christ is about to return. Biblical prophecy makes that clear. Surely, we ought to be studying our Bibles and understanding these prophecies. So many of these developments, as was brought out in that booklet and in the Trumpet magazine back in 2008, so many of them, fulfillment of Bible prophecy, prophecy that the Bible says is sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, hopefully we'll have some time at the very end for a few more emails. We got into a few of them yesterday, but you can email us, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States. Hoorah! One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror. Their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
The other day we referred to this this quote. This is from Herbert Armstrong from back in 1980. He talks about the way of competition. We've emphasized these two ways of life, not even just on the radio show, but also with the college students here on campus. But anyway, he says the way of competition, the way of I love me, I don't love you. He says the whole world is going that way. It says, and it likes that way, and it wants to keep going that way, and the world is in trouble. I mean, this is why the world is in trouble. Because it's proceeding along according to the way of get, the way of selfishness, the way of vanity. Herbert Armstrong, of course, taught about the other way, the opposite way, the way of unselfish, outflowing concern for the good and welfare of others. Malachi chapter 4 refers us back to the beginning, back to the law of Horeb, or where the law was given to the Israelites of old. It says in Malachi 4:4, remember you the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments. Here is God referring us back to our spiritual beginnings. And it always gets back to the law of God, the law of love. God is love, as it says in 1 John. And his law is a law of love. It says in verse 5, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. So it's the law first, referred to there in verse 4, and then you read about the end time Elijah and the work that he would do in turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and turning the hearts of the children to their fathers. In other words, building up the family of God, building God's family. God is a family. Father, Son, the marriage between the church and Christ. The children that are to come into that family through that marriage, through that divine union. You can read some on that, or at least that mother's role in Isaiah 56. But here it all has to revolve around law. There are laws of marriage and family. We've been going through marriage and family. Well, we have a course that goes by that name. And here of late, we've been talking about those clear and definite laws of God that are meant to protect and to guide family living, marriage, and family life. And we all fall short of that, and we all break those laws, and when we do, there's a penalty. Always there is. But when we're abiding by those laws, there are blessings. There's life, as it says at the end of Deuteronomy 30. Just switch back to Malachi 2, a few pages before this. It says in Malachi 2 in verse 1, again, speaking of Mr. Armstrong and the role that he played as the end time Elijah, it says, and now, O you priests, this commandment is for you, if you will not hear, and if you will not lay it to heart, to give glory unto my name, saith the Eternal of Hosts, I will even send the curse, it should read, upon you, and I will curse your blessings, yea, and I have curse them already, because you do not lay it to heart. Malachi 2, really the whole book, it's correction for the ministry. So many of those ministers, they just, as soon as Mr. Armstrong died, I mean, they were plotting, even before he died, to change the doctrines, to dismantle so many of the operations of the work. As I said recently on a program, I mean, what we're seeing play out in the United States of America, it's the same attack. It's the same, it's nonstop. They're just relentless. You listen to Morning Joe and you would think Donald Trump is still president. It's President Trump's business dealings. Now, oh, he exaggerated. the value of his company. Really? We're on this still? He's been out of the White House for a year. And we're talking about Donald Trump and the fact that he exaggerates? And we've got all of these problems in our world, in our nation. It was the same way with those Laodicean ministers. As they talked about, Herbert Armstrong was the problem. Mr. Armstrong did this wrong. Mr. Armstrong did that wrong. And meanwhile, the work was just falling apart all around them. And where is it today? It's gone. I mean, Ambassador College is gone. All the literature was discontinued. They sold off all the property. Most of the people left the church. Who knows about the Plain Truth anymore? The Plain Truth magazine. It was systematic. It was thorough. It was relentless, this attack on the truth. Malachi 2 here in verse 4, it says, "And you shall know that I have sent this commandment unto you, that my covenant might be with Levi, saith the Lord of hosts." God's covenant was with Herbert W. Armstrong. And all of those ministers are going to know it before it's said and done. God had an arrangement, an agreement with Herbert Armstrong, not with those ministers underneath him that Herbert Armstrong taught, by the way. Verse 5 says, "My covenant was with him of life and peace." It says, "And I will give them to him for the fear wherewith he feared me and was afraid before my name." See, this is how Mr. Armstrong was so different from those ministers underneath him. He feared God. It says fear, feared, and afraid. Three times in that verse, it refers to Levi's fear of God. This is not a human kind of fear. This is a proper spiritual fear of God the Father. He feared God, and so should we. This was a man of character. This was a man who looked to the Father. This was a man who was afraid to veer off course. He wanted to stay in line with God's commandments, those laws that were revealed at Mount Horeb. My father wrote this in chapter 6 of the God Family Vision book. And again, like all of our literature, we offer that book without cost or obligation. You can call our operators today and secure your free copy. But the whole chapter is about this covenant that God makes with Levi. And it says here, "Do you fear God as Levi did? Do you fear when your marriage might be failing?" I mean, do we fear enough to actually do something? Because a lot of people, when problems come along, they just learn to live with them. They don't confront them. They don't work to change them or to fix them. Do you fear when your children are not doing what they should? Do you fear whether you are lukewarm toward God's work? Do you fear whether you are doing your part in this work? He says, do you fear division in the church? Now listen to this statement. Most of God's people in this end time don't fear God. They just don't. I mean, the statistics bear this out. 95% of God's people just turned and walked away from the truth. 99% of the ministry, the ministers, the leaders, the shepherds, they fell away from the truth. I mean, this is an overwhelming number of people that just fell away from God. They rejected God. It says most of God's people in this end time don't fear God. Levi did. Mr. Armstrong, you see, he did. He did fear God. It says, do you fear competing with God's government? Can you get on your knees and just say, God, I know that there are some areas here where I hate your government, and I don't want to change my marriage, or I don't want to work with my children the way that I should. God, please help me to fear the way that Levi did. Help me to fear you the way that Mr. Armstrong did. What an example he set for us. It says here, Mr. Armstrong was a paragon of obedience to God, a remarkable example of a man who feared God. so much so that he restored all things. He didn't quit restoring after 10 or 15 truths. He was a man after God's own heart, and he wanted to restore everything the Father wanted him to restore, and he did. As I was saying the other day to the students, I mean, you could get to the end of your life at 92, 93 years of age and say, you know what, I've done enough. I've put in over 50 years in this ministry, as it was. He came to this mind-boggling realization in December of 1984. He's 92 years of age. And he felt compelled to put together and write Mystery of the Ages. I mean, this came together in the last year of Mr. Armstrong's life when he was virtually blind. And it's because he wasn't satisfied, as my father says, with just restoring 10 or 15 truths. He wanted to just keep pouring his heart into God's work, even when he was into his 90s. No retirement for him. I mean, that's some kind of fear of God. Just working for God all the way through to the end. Never give up. Never quit. Never throw in the towel. Do we fear God the way that he did? That's quite an example. It says in verse 6, the law of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity, and did turn many away from iniquity. That's the way Mr. Armstrong worked. He turned many away from sin. Malachi 4 says that he turned the hearts of the fathers to the children, and vice versa. So there was change. During his ministry, people worked hard to come out of sin and to make changes in their marriages, in their families. But see, we've got to keep at it all the way through to 93 if need be. Otherwise, we leave the door open for Satan to take us out. Matthew 24 and verse 13, it says, those who endure to the end, the same shall be saved. So we've got to, in a lot of ways, it's an endurance test. It's a marathon. But we've counted the cost, Luke 14. If we've gone through the baptism counseling and we've been baptized, we've got to be willing to give up anything and everyone even. If we're going to follow God all the way through, if we're going to follow in the steps of Christ right into the kingdom of God. Verse 7, for the priest's lips should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law at his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts, but you are departed out of the way. Most of God's ministers, you see, they departed out of the way. They forsook God. Even after all of that training, even after all of that instruction, all of those sermons, those messages, the teachings, the literature, the books. Coming back to that quote I just gave to you. Do you fear God as Levi did? Where's the one statement? Here it is. Most of God's people in this end time don't fear God, but Levi certainly did. Well, rather than go off to a promo, I will transition right into some email feedback coming from you, the listener, or the viewer. This one here says, awesome show, as usual. We really enjoy our evening meal while watching the Trumpet Daily. We really need that daily boost. No vaccine pun intended. It says here, there really is an absolute undeniable lack of truth in the world. This is the email I was referring to earlier. We experience it regularly in our daily lives. As you can see in the attached video, even some of the animals have had enough of the lunacy and want us to let them in from the madness. He sent a little video of a woodpecker pecking away at his doorbell. Ding, 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 ding. I should have brought the video. A woodpecker going at it. Maybe the woodpecker, as he says, maybe the woodpecker wants to get inside. Maybe he's looking for safe harbor. Who knows? It says here, we hold up our wine glasses to you and your guest hosts in a toast. Keep up the great work. Hold on to the precious truth of God. Another one here says, I want to thank you and your church for the great work you do. I have learned a lot from the pamphlets booklets, magazines, emails, podcasts, and especially your Bible study courses. It has changed my life for the better. For the better. I was raised Catholic, but they do a terrible job of teaching the Bible. Thanks for your help in developing a better spiritual life. Well, we do have a lot of material that you can churn through, including, as he mentions, the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence course. If you haven't enrolled in that course, 36 lessons, you work your way through that in 2 or 3 years, and you're going to get to know your Bible. If you want to get to know your Bible, that's one way to do it. It's powerful, powerful course, filled with revealed truth, God's knowledge, the sure word of prophecy, Christian living, history, everything we need in our spiritual diet. Another one here says, great program and video today. I'm glad to see that the platforms are expanding, and I hope you will place that video. This is the 8-minute video we had toward the end of yesterday's show. I hope you'll place that video on a lot of platforms too. I personally would even love to see YouTube skirted a bit and that it's posted anonymously or by a personal account. So we'll think about that. I don't imagine YouTube will like that video, that 8-minute video. We hope that it's part of an even bigger video that we put together down the road. In any event, here's another one. It says, wow, I was blown away by the 8-minute video you showed on today's program. I would really love to share that with everyone I know. Your people did an amazing job on the video. Is it going to be available? I love your show, and I watch it every day that it's on. Well, we'll certainly make it available in some form or fashion, and we certainly do want to distribute that just as far as it can possibly go. Here's another one from Pennsylvania. It says, being raised a Methodist all my life, I have since stopped going to that church and only listen to your show, read the trumpet from front to back, and listen to the Key of David. I do try to do these things Friday evening and or Saturday morning, but it's hard not to put up a Christmas tree and do some lights outside, even though I put up no manger scene. So here's someone who really is wrestling with, it is a struggle to come out of this world, particularly when you're surrounded by family who are just immersed into these traditions of men. It says, I've told my neighbors and some family members that I truly believe there is only one true church of God, that your church is the only church speaking truth about the prophecies. It's so hard not to give gifts because of my daughter's family and my 2 granddaughters. I just wish there was some way that your church could hold a service for those of us who are farther away in different states, especially with the lockdowns. To hold a service for those who have not been baptized but who do contribute offerings to your church for God's work. Well, you should know we do have PAC appearances, public appearance campaigns. We haven't had them since before the lockdown madness, but we are working even now to kick those off again here in the United States. I'm not sure where we'll be traveling to first, whether it's me or my father. In any event, we do reach out to those who are co-workers and donors, to those who contribute to the work, God's work, even if they might not be full-fledged members of the church. The final comment here says, just want you to know that what you and your father and the rest of the people who work in God's church are making a difference in people's lives. One last one says, everyone is glad to see God's dynamo radio man back after your short-term throat scenario. This is from a little over a week ago. I might say that I was scared and concerned, but now I laugh along with you regarding your skillful ending of the radio show on the 11th. Regarding the ending Bible study on reaping what is sown, I still think on such profound points from that show. I'm reminded of the old, I'm reminded of the fact that we're out of time. So I got through most of his comment, but in any event, we'll have to reserve the rest of it for a later time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.